Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, taped live at the SCMS Winter Music Festival. I'm King FM's Dave Beck, and I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. By the way, you can find out more about the episodes and get details at seattlechambermusic.org and at king.org. Make sure to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, and away we go. At a symphony or recital hall, what difference does it make when it comes to the design of backstage areas? A lot, according to Jonathan Vanocur, violist with the Seattle Chamber Music Society. Reflecting on the playing he's done in the Boston Symphony, St. Louis Symphony, Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, and now as principal viola of the San Francisco Symphony, Jonathan ponders how backstage design affects the interaction and even bonding among members of a symphony orchestra. He says that the newly opened SCMS Center for Chamber Music in downtown Seattle is the ideal location and design for musicians and audiences to listen, perform, socialize, and build community around the performance of chamber music at the highest level. It's part three of our podcast from the Seattle Chamber Music Society Winter 2021 Virtual Festival. What are your reflections now? As you say, it wasn't a long stint with the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, but you encountered the personalities of these orchestras. You were in St. Louis as the principal, and San Francisco now, and the Leipzig Gewandhaus. What are your observations about how orchestras differ culturally, or just in the personalities of the ensembles?
I would say that you could expect, let's say within a given country like the United States, that an orchestra is made up of about 100 or so people, right? And that difference is, you get 100 people, like how much can the culture of the place really matter? But it certainly does, and every orchestra really does have its own vibe to it. And I think some of that comes from the tradition of the place. I also played a lot in the Boston Symphony Orchestra, which is a very old orchestra and has its own traditions. So when I think about Boston, San Francisco, St. Louis, just the sense you get in, say, the lounge or the tuning room when you're just hanging out with musicians is really different place to place, which is, I think, amazing because, we're all from the same country, and usually in an American orchestra, people are coming from all over the place. It's not like, in the San Francisco Symphony, most of the people are from the West Coast, not at all. And yet you still feel that each orchestra is so different. I would expect things to kind of average out in a way, but it seems like the culture is more important than that, And sometimes it's a product of, even the space itself. Like in the St. Louis Symphony, the concert hall is this grand old movie theater that became a concert hall later. So the backstage facilities are really not geared towards a symphony orchestra, in the sense that there just isn't much. There's not much space. There's this tiny little orchestra lounge. There's no convenient place to really unpack your instruments or anything. And so it fosters this togetherness backstage. Like, you can't escape each other. You're all just forced to hang out in small quarters. And it turns into a very collegial sort of vibe. Whereas in San Francisco, we have a backstage area, but it's essentially like a loading dock. There's not really anywhere to congregate. So people are forced to sort of mill about and like maybe grab the couple of seats that might be available. But it's harder in a way to, there's not as much of a place to really sit down with your colleagues, whoever might be there, and get to know them. You have to work harder for it. So those kinds of things really affect the sense of an orchestra, I think.
That's so interesting. And it leads us back into Seattle and this new space that, you're seeing for the first time this winter, the new Center for Chamber Music in downtown Seattle. What's been the vibe there, to use your words, in terms of getting out of the Bay Area, getting to see people and play music with live human beings? What has that felt like for you? How's that been for you?
Okay, the new center is amazing, first of all. I'm struggling to think of another chamber music society or festival that has the same kind of a dedicated home. It's very rare, I think, for especially what I think of as, you know, basically a summer festival, but the Chamber Music Society in Seattle really runs two festivals, the Winter Festival and the Summer Festival. But even so, to have a full-time year-round space like that is incredible. And I've been coming to the festival for many years preceding the opening of this center, so I can, you know, see what the difference is like. And it just being able to come together every day there with all of the musicians, some of whom you might not be playing with because there's always multiple groups going at any time. But we're all there together and we rehearse. And then, well, under normal circumstances, we'd be eating meals together there and able to hang out even when the day is done. One of the rehearsal spaces can essentially be like a living room in the evening. And that is amazing. It fosters just a lot of, just a great communal spirit amongst the musicians. And even during this pandemic, it was able to do that, particularly earlier in the summer. I was there in July as well. You know, the virus was going, but not as much as it was this winter. And we were a little bit more free-spirited about everything, I would say, in the summer festival. And then during the winter, we had to be, everybody was just more cautious. You know, we weren't ever like eating together. We were just rehearsing and trying to keep it to that, which was a little sad because the space would have been so great for having our meals together and hanging out, but we just felt it wasn't the right move.
Well, it's going to be extraordinary when things get better. There will be films there and masterclasses and all sorts of performances and open rehearsals and things and beautiful facility just around the corner from Benaroya Hall. So great things are going to happen in the chamber, the Center for Chamber Music in months to come. I just want to wrap up here in the next couple minutes with some reflections on what you got to play this winter and who you played with and what that reunion felt like.
Yeah, sure. One piece that we played was Mozart's G minor piano quartet. As we had to tweak the programming a little bit because of some last minute changes and things. And originally we were going to do some Mozart string quartet. And when that had to be canceled, one musician in particular was just passionate about, well, we have to do some Mozart. It's so sad to not be playing any Mozart. And so the personnel, it worked out that we could do the G minor piano quartet, which a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, know, but it's a particularly stormy first movement. And then just a really beautiful slow movement and a great rondo finale. And that was with Ed Aaron, Ben Bowman, and Jiwon. We had a great time rehearsing it. You know, not a lot of time, which is almost perfect when you're playing Mozart. You don't want to overcook it. You know, so we did our couple days of rehearsal, and then the performance felt really spontaneous. It's almost, that piece is, at times, it's really like a piano concerto. Some of the times it feels like all four voices are really playing as a chamber ensemble, and then at times it goes more into a soloist 2D kind of feeling, and she was fabulous. And then the other piece that I played also with G1 was the Rebecca Clark Sonata. And maybe listeners aren't as familiar with that, but it's also, most violists consider it a staple of the viola repertoire, and it's really, I think, just a masterpiece. Unfortunately, she just didn't write all that much. She wrote a lot early in her life, and then by the time she was probably 30 or so, she kind of stopped composing, sadly. But the Viola Sonata is from around 1919, and it's full of influences like Debussy and Eastern music and currents that were running in modern music at the time, like kind of exotic scales, like whole tone scales. But it's a very rhapsodic and colorful piece, and we loved playing it.
Yeah, your performance of it was so beautiful. It was just an absolute treat to hear that. And I was excited to discover recently in the Classical King FM library, there's a transcription of it for cello. So with your permission, Jonathan, we're going to be... it's such a beautiful piece of music. And my last question is, what's on your music stand there in the Bay Area, or what's kind of top of mind for you in terms of projects you're getting ready for?
Yeah. Well, funny you would ask, because just today I was pulling out. Well, here's my music stand. Yeah, you can see it. But I have a recital coming up for which originally I had a certain program in mind, and I just wrote to my pianist today saying, hey, would you consider, you know, tweaking it a bit? Because in part, playing the Clark Sonata there in Seattle recently got me thinking about doing really like an English Viola Works program featuring the sonata, but then also featuring another piece Rebecca Clark wrote, which is called Morpheus, also viola and piano. And then there's a Frank Bridge piece. He's also English. Two different pieces for viola and piano. And Frank Bridge was one of Britain's, or probably his main composition teacher. And Britain has a couple of great pieces for viola, one of which he never really published, but he wrote it when he was about 16. It's an elegy, and it's a great piece. He wrote a lot of great things when he was quite young that he didn't want published, but fortunately they're out there now. And then another piece called Lacrimae, which is based on, or it's called Reflections on a Song of John Dowland, which is one of my favorite pieces in the viola repertoire. So that's kind of what I'm working on these days, brainstorming about this program and bringing back some of these pieces.
Yeah. The English and their feel for the viola is extraordinary. So, I wish you well as you prepare that concert. That sounds wonderful. Absolutely. Yeah. Jonathan Vinokur, thanks so much for your time today, for your wonderful contributions to the Seattle Chamber Music Society, and for a great conversation.
Very great talking to you, Dave. Thank you. Yeah.
That brings this latest Classical Conversations podcast to an end. Our engineers for the series are Nikhil Sarma and Bill Levy. Program assistance from Rachel Soprati of SCMS, James Ennis, the artistic director, Connie Cooper, the executive director. I'm Dave Beck from Classical King FM. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation podcast. This podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. Nikhil Sarma produces the program. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusicsociety.org or to king.org. Hope to have you back with us for the next episode.